Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. Hey, Al Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. All right, y'all, Scott Horton Show. I'm him. Check out the website, scotthorton.org. More than 4,000 interviews going back to 2003 for you there. And sign up for the podcast feed as well. And follow me on Twitter, at Scott Horton Show. All right, introducing Kenneth Vogel from Politico. Huge story from last week. Obama DOJ drops charges against alleged broker of Libyan weapons. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, great to be with you.
Good to have you here. So, go ahead. Tell us, who is Mark Turi?
Yeah, so Mark Turi is an arms dealer who had done extensive work with the U.S. government. It's important to note that the U.S. government had been a client of his, or he had made deals at the behest of the U.S. government. He believed that he had permission, in fact, more than permission, encouragement from the U.S. government, the CIA, actually, to broker a deal that would send weapons to Libya to arm the Libyan rebels who at the time were seeking to overthrow Gaddafi, which was a goal of the U.S. foreign policy community, including the Clinton State Department. And he went through all the paperwork necessary to make this happen. And eventually the State Department, through the Department of Justice, actually brought a case against him alleging that he was doing something that was prohibited. Well, he said no. In fact, in the various filings in his court case, he said that we were doing this at the behest of the CIA, and he believes at the behest of the Clinton State Department. And so this case proceeded for a couple years and cost him a whole lot of money in attorney's fees. And suddenly, with a disclosure deadline looming for the government, where the government would have had to have produced some information, including classified depositions of CIA, active CIA personnel who apparently testified about the role of the State Department in this. Suddenly, rather than produce that information, the case was dropped, and dropped sort of mysteriously. And Turi's people say it was dropped because we essentially had the goods, and the State Department was going to have to produce the goods, showing that this went all the way up to the top in the State Department, and that would be very damaging for Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign as well as for the Obama administration, because if you remember, Hillary Clinton was asked specifically about this, whether she had any knowledge of or role in providing arms to these Libyan rebels during the Benghazi hearings before the Senate in 2013, and she said no. Well, if there's information that shows that, in fact, she did have knowledge of this and it was done at her behest, that would be catching her in a really tough spot.
Right. The proper answer there is either I don't remember or I can't talk about that in a public hearing or whatever. If it's a classified thing, I can neither confirm nor deny. But not no. The answer, Senator, is absolutely I have no idea what you're talking about. That's perjury.
Yeah, I mean, that was the allegation, and it's been made since then. But the questioning was done by Senator Rand Paul, who at that time, 2013, was gearing up for his own potential presidential bid for the Republican Party presidential nomination. And at the time, he kind of dropped it. But you could tell from his questioning, if you go back and read the transcript, like, he knew that there was something there and kind of asked an open-ended question, and she said that she wasn't aware of it. Mm-hmm. And since then, we have had some argument, and I don't know if it was related to this case, but certainly the timing seems to be coincidental. There was a suggestion that maybe WikiLeaks and Julian Assange might have some emails that would shed light on Hillary Clinton's knowledge of or role in providing arms for these rebels. And so you have these two tracks happening at once, the WikiLeaks sort of looming disclosure, as well as the U.S. government being required to produce documents and testimony in this case, that all of a sudden, instead of pursuing it, the government just sort of rolled up its case, dismissed the charges. And it's interesting to note, these are not, Scott, just like, okay, we're going to, you know, the defendant in this case admits that there was, you know, some error on his part, but that we're dropping the case. Right? These charges were dropped with prejudice. That's a big deal. And they were dropped without a fine. Usually in a settlement like this, if the government thinks they have a strong case, first of all, they wouldn't bring the case if they didn't think they would have a strong case. Second of all, if they're gonna spend this much resources pursuing the case, they would at least get something out, get some concession out of it, get a fine, or get an admission of guilt, but a settlement or a partial admission of guilt. They got nothing out of this. And Tory's people suggest that it's because they knew that if they continued to pursue this case, there could be some very damaging disclosures.
Yeah. Well, and listen, I mean, we already know from so many other sources, the Judicial Watch emails that Judicial Watch got that Judge Napolitano has written about, and plus just contemporaneous. I think Rand Paul was even referencing the Sunday Times, which had, you know, done reporting about ships full of guns landing in Turkey and the Muslim Brotherhood and other jihadis fighting over who was going to get them and all this kind of thing. And that was back at the time.
And there's no dispute that, in fact, the U.S. government did play a role in arming these rebels, though they haven't, like, officially come out and said this is U.S. government policy, but rather have suggested, the suggestion has been that it was sort of a covert operation through the CIA. Well, the information that Tory allegedly has would seem to suggest otherwise, that it was official policy in Clinton's State Department.
Well, why do you think
they
indicted him? Because, yeah, I mean, I think that's beyond question. We all know the CIA and the State Department were running guns to the jihadis to fight in that thing.
Right.
But so why would the Department of Justice try to do something about this? That's the part that doesn't make any sense. Or I guess maybe why would somebody at the State Department not give them a call and say, hey, this is one of our covert thingamajigs, and so you guys should back off?
Well, the suggestion from Tory's people is that this was an effort to scapegoat him for a policy that was not successful. There's no suggestion here. I mean, the big so what here, I think, is like what happened to these guns. Like if it was a, there was an arming of these rebels and then the guns, you know, were used, for instance, in the 2012 terrorist attack on the consulate that killed U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens and security personnel, U.S. security personnel, then that would be a huge, even a bigger problem than just a policy question. There is no evidence of that, but nor is there a really like a bright line that can be traced. I mean, once these weapons are in the hands of these rebels, it's very difficult to determine sort of where they ended up. And there has, in fact, been reporting that suggests that some of the weapons that were in the hands of some of these rebels in Libya, not necessarily these weapons, but some weapons fell into ISIS's hands. So, right. There's a chain of custody issue here. And in fact, with the Tory weapons in particular, the State Department says these weapons never made it to Libya. He was trying to circumvent our, authority, our prohibition on shipping arms to Libya by going through Qatar or the UAE, but that these arms never made it to Libya. So, again, raising the question that you raise, why bring the case in the first place?
Yeah.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
And by the way, just to on point of fact there, when you say ended up in the hands of the Islamic State, are you talking about after they were transferred to Syria, or you're talking about the Libyan branch of the Islamic State, which is also now a thing?
Right. I mean, I guess I'm talking about that it's impossible to say definitively, but there has been reporting that suggests that once they make it into the hands of these rebels, it's sort of impossible to know where they would end up. And certainly you see the Islamic State being active in Libya, as well as obviously in Syria and the civil war raging there.
Well, and of course, there's been plenty of reports of these guns ending up in the Sinai Peninsula in the hands of Egyptian rebels against the police state there. So,
yeah, and I'll tell you, I mean, there is potentially, we could potentially have some clarity on this, but you know, if the proceedings in the Turi case were made public, I mean, there had already been depositions of CIA personnel that are classified in that case. And I know that we, as well as other media outlets, are seeking through the Freedom of Information Act to get a hold of those through the State Department. I think the chances are extremely slim that we would get them. But we are aware that the CIA told some of the people who did testify in this case that if they chose to testify, you know, it was their decision, but the CIA would go through their testimony after the fact to determine if it involved the disclosure of any classified information, and they would redact that from the testimony. So you see how this could be a very sensitive issue for the State Department, for the Department of Justice, for Hillary Clinton and her presidential campaign, as well as for the Obama administration. I'll just add one more wrinkle, Scott, that I think was interesting to us that we didn't really get to report out. You know, that the Mark Turi actually initially had a lawyer who he paid a lot of money to, and he just ran out of money because it's expensive when the government is trying to prosecute a case like this against you. The court appointed an attorney for Turi who lasted just a short amount of time. Apparently the representation was seen as unsatisfactory, and so Turi went back to the court and said, you know, we'd like a different court-appointed attorney. So they appointed an extremely expensive, top-notch lawyer who ended up getting him out of it, you know, essentially brokering the settlement. Well, this lawyer works for the same firm that represents Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, the Democratic National Committee, Barack Obama and his family personally, the Obama campaign. So yet another wrinkle there. I asked the firm, as well as the lead lawyer on Turi's case and Hillary Clinton's lead lawyer from the firm, hey, how did you guys manage to, represent, what kind of firewalls did you have in here that would sort of inoculate you against a potential conflict representing two clients who could end up on, you know, very opposite sides of the same case? And I didn't get any response. So yet another unanswered question in this story.
Well, and also, how is it that they ended up just being the lucky firm that has both of these people for clients in the first place? If it was supposedly picked by the judge, you said, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the judge is a Republican appointee. It's always tough to know in these cases when you have a court-appointed attorney. You know, I'm always reluctant. My mother-in-law.
It could be a coincidence.
Is a federal public defender, and we have public defenders of the family. So I'm always reluctant to cast aspersions on the motives for taking a case. But you know, then they cannot. You know, they only have, my understanding is, if you're in that rotation of being like a court-appointed attorney, you only have like a few sort of like flags that you can raise, you know, challenge flags, to use a football analogy. You could say, oh, I don't want to take this client because of this or because of that. So it's tough to know, but it does seem coincidental. And
sure does.
And I don't know why they wouldn't answer the question that I posed to both of them about what they did to sort of prevent potential conflict in the case.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, real quick, before I let you go, you mentioned that right before we went on that there was a brand new WikiLeaks dump. What's the origin of what they've just dumped this morning?
It's also emails, and it appears through John Podesta's account, but a lot of interesting communications with the Clinton Foundation about fundraising, including fundraising from Tom Steyer, the San Francisco hedge fund billionaire. We see a progression of emails mentioning him. I tweeted a couple. One was in 2008, where this guy is sort of just emerging as a mega donor, and John Podesta, whose organization, Center for American Progress, had gotten a lot of money from Tom Steyer. John Podesta recommends Tom Steyer to be Obama's first energy secretary. So I thought that was interesting. And then a few years later, 2011, there are emails in which John Podesta is emailing with the Clinton Foundation fundraiser, a guy by the name of Dennis Chang, who is now the lead fundraiser for Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign, trying to, quote, steer, I'll give you the exact wording, but he's basically trying to get Tom Steyer to give money to the Clinton Foundation. The wording is, he recommended Tom Steyer for energy secretary, then worked to, quote, try to push for Clinton Foundation support from Tom Steyer. So you see an interesting nexus there between the Clinton Foundation, Hillary Clinton presidential campaign, John Podesta's group, the Center for American Progress, and the Obama administration.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you're obviously very up on this. Is it? I'm almost positive it was reported that the FBI said that they had recovered the missing 30,000 emails, the ones that were supposedly all about Chelsea Clinton's upcoming wedding and yoga exercises and this kind of thing. But is that really right? And is there any indication that anybody's ever going to release those?
I mean, I've seen conflicting reporting on that. The State Department is still doing a schedule of releases, but as they've gone on, you know, we saw one.
Those aren't from the missing 30,000, though, right?
Right. They're not A and B. They sort of like trickled down to like just a little like drips as opposed to the sort of interesting thing. We're actually seeing duplicative releases of emails that have already been out there. So I think that, you know, the Trump folks were hoping that WikiLeaks might have some of those. There's been no indication that WikiLeaks is anything from the State Department. What they're getting now is through private servers. That said, Hillary Clinton did have a private server, so who knows?
Yep. All right, well, listen, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yep, it was a pleasure.
Good work. All right, y'all, that is Kenneth Vogel. He's at Politico. This one is Obama DOJ drops charges against alleged broker of Libyan weapons. All right, y'all, and that's the show. Check out the archives at scotthorton.org. Sign up for the podcast feed there as well. Help support at scotthorton.org/donate. And follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Thanks. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. If this nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone, we are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com.